ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Bratrinam Brayanam Brata
Bratrinam Brayanam Brata
Yonutishtati Dharmavit
Yonutishtati Dharmavit
Sapunyabandhuh Purusha
Sapunyabandhuh Purusha
Marudhisahamodate
Marudhisahamodate
Translation. A brother aware of the principles of religion follows in the footsteps of his elder brothers. Because of being highly elevated, such a pious brother gets the opportunity to associate and enjoy with demigods like the Maruts, who are all affectionate to their brothers. Purport. According to their belief in various material relationships, people are promoted to various planets. Here it is said that one who is very faithful to his brothers should follow a path similar to theirs and get the opportunity for promotion to Marut Loka. Narad Muni advised Prajapati Daksha's second group of sons to follow the elder brothers and be promoted to the spiritual realm, to the spiritual world. So the elder brother is seen by the younger members, younger siblings in the family, to be like the father, represents the father. So then the younger brothers, sisters, they always follow the oldest brother. Even in dealings, they will use the respectful endings of the words in dealing with them. Like you have in India, in some languages, you have a form that is respectful and a form that is equal. So with the elder brother, generally then the respectful terminology is used. That is the tradition. Because they represent the father. If the father is not at the house, or the father is passed on, then the oldest brother, then he becomes like the head of the family. So this is the tradition. So Narad Muni had already spoken to the elder brothers about karma, and that this meant that they should follow their father's instructions. So the real father is Lord Vishnu, and he has given them transcendental instruction about how to worship him and how to go back to Godhead. So that then they did that. They followed the instruction of their father, their spiritual father, and this way went back to Godhead. So now Narad Muni is telling the next group of brothers, just like your brothers, they followed the Dharma and followed the instruction of their father. Now you should follow their example and follow the path they followed. So in this way then they were able to, by this, they'll be able to go back to Godhead. Because the younger brothers, then following the path of the older brothers, following the father, then they are getting so much benefit. So, yeah. So even in the material world, we see that if one is able to follow, one is able to have this respect, then one will go to the Marut Loka, where the Maruts are. Because they are, a group of brothers, and they are very faithful to each other, all 49 of them. They all started off as one conception. But then Indra, who was interestingly enough their brother, then he decided that he had heard that this was going to be some problem, this conception. So then he went into the womb and started to cut them up into pieces, seven pieces, and then nothing seemed to have happened. So he cut each one into seven pieces. And then they told him, hey, be a little peaceful here. We're your brothers, and we're not going to create any harm. Like that. So then the Maruts appeared as 49 instead of as one. So they're very affectionate to their elder brothers. So this is the principles of Dharma. Dharma is for the purpose. Actually, the Dharma means devotional service. Factually, if we look at it realistically, Dharma is coming from the Lord, and the Lord is only going to speak on devotional service. So that means actual the Vedic principles of religion are only meant for going back to Godhead. That is the actual purpose. So all the Vedic literatures are written for this purpose only, is how to go back to Godhead. Now, there are some unscrupulous persons in the material world. Well, let's not say some. Many. And they are not interested in this path of bhakti. Therefore, they become deviated by the prospects of karma and fruit of activities, fruit of results, and jnana. So the same principles of dharma apply to them, but now they just remove the element of doing these activities for the pleasure of the Lord in devotional service. So now they do these same activities for material purposes. Like here, the same principle is being used in two ways. Here the actual point is your older brothers followed the transcendental path, went back to Godhead. You should follow your brothers. That is the dharma. The non-devotional is that the sons are, how do you say, the family is materialistic, so then the following of the older brothers will simply give a result in a pious, pious result. They'll go to the heavenly planets where the Maruts live. So this is for the non-devotees. But for the devotees, they understand the principles of dharma are meant for devotional service. So it's just a matter of turning the vision back or turning it around. When we preach, then most people think dharma is for material gain or for merging into the Brahman. But the devotees know that this is not the purpose. Real religion is meant for going back to Godhead. They are misusing it. But indirectly, at least they're following the Lord's directions. So it's accepted that at least this is proper. They accept the authority of the scriptures, which are coming from the Lord. Then we see here is that in this path, what is happening is that the sons, they have gone to this Narayana Saras, and they are bathing there. In this way, they're becoming purified. All the dirty things within the heart, the lust, greed, anger, envy, all these things are going from the heart. And they are performing their duty of serving the Lord. And they are approaching the Lord for the performance of their duties, because this is what they're supposed to do. The Vedic system is the whole Varnashram is situated in goodness. That all the four varnas, all the four ashrams in the actual varnashram system are situated in goodness. Because goodness gives knowledge. By performance of activities in goodness, the result is one gets knowledge. And knowledge means knowledge of our relationship with the Lord and our position as His servant. So this knowledge is what is gained by everyone in the transcendental varnashram system. So in this system, then, the natural qualities of the soul, you know, the qualities that are inherent in the soul, their mercy, their friendliness, their compassion, their justice, all these different qualities that people are actually looking for are naturally manifest. Because that is the purpose of the system. The system is meant to please the Lord. It's situated in goodness. Everyone is becoming purified. And everyone is situated on this topmost platform of social interaction. It comes as this natural side benefit. So it's a very elevated system that is here because it's based on trying to reestablish our relationship with the Lord by establishing our relationships with the devotees of the Lord. And then in that association, serving the Lord. So then it's just a matter of a fine point of what are the duties that you perform. In the Daiva Varnashram system, it doesn't matter what are the duties. What is the ashram dharma or what is the varna dharma? If one is doing it for Krishna, then it's devotional service. And one is elevated and one goes back to Godhead. So this is the position here. So Narad Muni is pointing out the real dharma. Right? And that's why this is being recorded here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, because this is the actual Dharma. It means the devotees of the Lord are supposed to follow the transcendental path, and then their dependents or their those who are subservient to them are supposed to follow them, and everything becomes perfect. It's a very nicely arranged path. So today is also the appearance day of Ramanujacharya. So it's very interesting that he is also very much fixed in this point of establishing the culture of Krishna consciousness, that we see that in his teachings that he emphasized this point very much, that while he was Ramanujacharya, he was appeared in South India, and there was a disciple of Yamunacharya who had taken sannyas. His name was Shailapurna. So this Shailapurna, he had two sisters, I think Kanti Mati and Deepti Mati. So then they each had married very nice qualified Brahmins, but with time there was no child. And so they were feeling some anxiety because their duties as grihasthas were not being fulfilled. So they went to Parthasarathi temple in Madras, and there performed many yajnas and many activities in devotion to the Lord, praying that the Lord may bless them with a son. So then, within a year, then a son was born to Kanti Mati, the oldest sister. And very similar time, then was also born to the younger sister, a son also. So Shailapurna, hearing this, he was very pleased, and he came to visit and see the children. So when he saw the child, especially the Kanti Mati's son, he was very impressed with the auspicious markings that were on his body. Very auspicious symptoms were there. So he called him Ramanuja, which means the younger brother of Ram. Ram Anuja. The Anuja means the younger brother. So this is a name of Lakshman. And the other, the son of Deepti Mati, then he named Govinda. So these two cousins then, they grew up together and they were very highly qualified. So as they were growing up, then at some point they moved, I think, to Kanchipuram, which is a place where there's many, many temples. I think there's 22 temples. There's Vishnu Kanchi and Shaiva Kanchi. So in Vishnu Kanchi, there's 22 Vishnu temples. And then I think in Shaiva Kanchi, there's one temple, I think, to Kamakshi Devi, like that, who's a form of Yoga Maya, and is known as Kamakshi, where she's worshipped by the Shaivites as a form of Durga, Parvati. So then in this town, it's very, even today, you'll find that it's very much centered around these temples. So it's a main seat of learning and Brahminical culture. So they were living in between. They were between Kanchipuram and some other place. So there was this devotee named Kanchipurna who was traveling. Every day he would travel from Kanchipuram to this one village and do worship at this village. So every day he would walk by Ramanuja's house. So one day Ramanuja was walking the other way and they met each other. And Ramanuja was very cultured, very kind. And he spoke to this elder devotee and he could see that he had heard his name, that he was a very renowned devotee, and he invited him to his house for lunch. So then Kanchipurna was very happy because he could see this very nice boy invited, nice family, nice culture. So he went to the house and he took lunch. And after lunch, when he sat down in that, Ramanuja went to massage his feet. So Kanchipurna said that this is not proper because Kanchipurna was born in a Shudra family and Ramanuja was born in a very elevated I think of the particular group of Brahman families, then they were from the top Brahminical family. And then, so he was started to massage Kanchipurna's feet, and Kanchipurna objected, saying, "This is not proper, that you're a Brahmin and all this, it's not good." So then Ramanuja said, "If having this very cheap thread, being known as a Brahmin, will stop me from rendering service to the devotees, which is a main limb of devotional service, then this being a Brahmin is an obstacle in devotional service. So what is the use of this?" So Kanchipurna was very pleased. He was very amazed, actually, because at this time Ramanuja was only 12. And he could see that his devotion, his determination, was very fixed. So he was very impressed. So we can see from this time as Ramanuja was very much understood the actual principles of Dharma. The actual principles are anyone who's engaged in the Lord's service, they are a devotee, they are respectable, they are a Brahmin. So with this understanding, then he was preaching in South India. We see also in his student life that after that, then I think after some time after that incident, then his father he had died. So then, his father had died. So then he went with his mother and his wife, and they moved to Kanchipurna, where he then, I think he was, I think they moved there, and then shortly after that, then his father arranged for his marriage. And a very qualified girl was chosen. They were married, a very nice 7-day program, nice big festival. Then after a month, then his father left. That happened at the village. And then from the village they decided, because it was feeling so bad, because the village, that was the father's village. So then they moved to Kanchipuram. So then Ramanuja there, then he took up study with one Yadav Prakash. So this Yadav Prakash then was a very renowned scholar in Kanchipuram, but unfortunately he was a Mayavadi. So he would speak very nicely in the grammar and all these things. He could speak very well, but he would always give the impersonal conclusions, Shankara's conclusions. So in the beginning he became very attached to Ramanuja because he was very intelligent. But moreover, he was very cultured, very humble, and that. Otherwise, it's very common for students, they will be very proud. They're very, very proud if they are very expert. Or if the teacher is very, very prominent, then they become proud. Because their connection with the teacher, that makes them big. Or if you're the student of such a great teacher, that makes one also very great. So then he was not like that, so he was very much appreciated by his teacher. But so he would, even though he found faults in what his teacher was saying, because he was speaking to Mayavad philosophy, then this was not how he said. He would remain silent. But then one day after lunch, all the students had gone to their houses, but he stayed back and he was giving massage to Yadav Prakash. And then one of the students came back after his lunch and wanted to discuss a verse from Chandogya Upanishad. And in this verse, it was a verse about the lotus eyes of the Lord and the color of the eyes, the reddish lotus eyes of the Lord. And he wanted to know about this verse, Kapyasam. So the verse was Kapyasam Pundarikam Eva Akshini. So then they wanted to know, the student wanted to know how this was explained. So then Shankaracharya, he had explained this, that the Kapi, that Kapi means the, I think Kapi means the monkey, and the Asam means the backside. So then he was explaining how, you know, in very pleasant language, he was saying that the Supreme Lord had eyes like lotuses, as red as a monkey's backside. You know, very poetic, very sweet. So then Ramanuja, hearing this, he couldn't control himself, and he started crying, very hot tears. So these tears fell on the body of the teacher. The teacher looked up and was amazed why he's feeling, you know, what's happened. He says that he is very surprised. So Ramanuja said here, "O Master, it causes me much suffering to hear this terrible explanation from a great soul like yourself. How sinful it is to compare the beautiful lotus eyes of the Lord to the posterior of a monkey. I never expected to hear such a thing from my teacher." So then Yadavakash, he was also very surprised that from the student that they would rebuke the teacher, even though he's done it in a very pleasant way. And so then he says, "Okay, if you're so smart, let's hear your interpretation." And then Ramanuja said, just very proudly saying, "Yes, the principle is by the grace of the teacher, everything is possible." So then he says that, "By your mercy, everything is possible." It means by your mercy, even though generally the student won't speak and give an explanation different than the teacher, or correct the teacher, by the mercy of the teacher, he'll be able to do it. So something like this is impossible, but by the mercy of the teacher. So we see the etiquette, the culture is still being maintained here. This is very, very important, because that was what was an outstanding feature of Ramanuja, is that he was intelligent and very cultured. Then Ramanuja, then very peacefully, then he said this: "Instead of understanding the posterior of a monkey from the word kapyasam," he said, "another meaning is possible. Kapi can be taken as kam jalam pibati, that which drinks up the water, or in other words, the sun. The word asam also means to blossom. So the whole word kapyasam can be understood as that which blossoms under the sun, or in other words, the lotus flower. Thus we can understand the mantra of the Upanishad to mean that the Lord has eyes as beautiful as the lotus flower." So Yadav Prakash is very surprised to hear this, because being able to break this up by syllables and being able to explain means you have to have very vast learning of Sanskrit. Because in Sanskrit, it's a very, very interesting language, very scientific, that everything that there is in Sanskrit, all the words, they come out of what's called these root words, or dhatus. And there's 2,000 of them. So from these 2,000 dhatus, you can get every word that there is in the Sanskrit language. Right? So that means basically you can make unlimited words, but they all come back to these 2,000. Of these 2,000, about 1,200 will be regularly seen in the scriptures. 800 are very rare. So generally, in these 800, you get all these little syllables like this. So for him to be able to give such explanations meant he was very, very qualified. So then, with this, he could take them apart. Just kam jalam pibati. He could take that out of these two syllables, kapi, like that. So then he was impressed at how he was so intelligent, but then he also became afraid, because he was thinking that this person, he's so much actually more intelligent than I am, because the teacher didn't see that. He just saw very obvious kapi, monkey, right? And then asam, you know, one backside. So then he didn't think of the context. That you never hear in the scriptures. Then you have what is called alankara and sahitya, which means all the poetry and the ornaments. And in such a explanation, it doesn't match. You don't talk about something very wonderful and beautiful, you know, like comparing it to the backside of a monkey. You know, you're comparing the Lord's lotus eyes to the backside of a monkey. you know, or, you know, the beautiful, how you say, you know, the, how you say, the young girl, her cheeks are reddish like the backside of a monkey. You know, one will not impress anyone with such poetry, right? But the interesting thing is the scholar didn't understand that, though he's very, in fact, he just took the obvious meaning and just did that. But in the context that was there, he should have understood there's something deeper and looked for that. But being a Mayavadi, he doesn't care about the Lord, so he didn't bother. So he could see that this person is so much more qualified. And he's already written a commentary on one of the sutras in the Upanishads. And this the mantra Satyam Jnanam Anantam Brahma that contradicted everything that the Mayavads say, defeated Shankara, because Shankara would use this point very, very much. In this Anantam Brahma. Satyam Jnanam, these are all the Mayavadi buzzwords, right? Satyam, truth, Jnanam, knowledge, Anantam, unlimited, Brahma, the, you know, the Brahman, the absolute. So it's like, for them, it's like a perfect sutra that they can just take and do all their Mayavad, you know, how you say, word juggling with. He took it and defeated Shankara. So then Kanchipurna and his disciples became very afraid that this person is going to, if he stays in the school, he's making trouble. If we throw him out of the school, he'll start his own school, right? And then he's going to preach very, now he's quiet. At least he only makes trouble in the school. If he goes out, then he'll teach everybody else about dualism. And so they thought this is very bad. So they thought we have to get rid of him. For the cause, for the, how you say, the protection or sake of the Acharya, Shankara, we have to get rid of him. So they devised a plan that they would go take bath in the Ganges. And by going to the Ganges, then they would take their bath there and come back. This is what they told Ramanuja. But their plan was, is they will go on the way there. They have to go through the Vindhya Mountains, which is like complete jungle. That's Madhya Pradesh. It's like all the dacoits, everyone, that's their hiding place. There's so many ravines and mountains and caves, and it's an ideal place for all these people to be. So they figured in this place we'll be able to dispose of Ramanuja. You know, we can kill him there. And then we just say he died of a fever, this, that. And so then they'll go to the Ganga and take bath and free themselves from the sin of killing a Brahmin and then come back. So that was their idea, actually, to go to the Ganga. So then they explained to Ramanuja, we're going, taking bath in the Ganges like this. And so he was very enthusiastic. And so then they all went. His mother was not happy with the idea because it's a long journey, take them like 6 months. But she saw that there's a very pious, you know, very nice devotional benefit from this, so she thought, you know, for the benefit of my son, let him go. Like that. So then they went off, and also Govinda, who is Ramanuja's cousin, he went along. And they all started walking, and after about 4 days they had reached into the Vindhya Mountains and all that, into the dense forest. And then they thought, oh, this is a good time to get rid of Ramanuja. So Govinda happened to be close by and heard this. You know, he wasn't present in the assembly because they knew he was his cousin. But he was at a distance, but he heard the plan. So he went and told Ramanuja. So then Ramanuja immediately just left. He just turned towards the south, which was back to their village, and started walking, even though it was just before dark. So, you know, in the jungle at that time is not a safe place. But he was a little worried, but then he then got inspiration that the Lord will protect, and so then he immediately left. Then when the disciples of Yamuna Prakash went looking for Ramanuja, they couldn't find him. So because it was up until dark, so they figured they were calling for him, and he doesn't know the plan. So they figured some wild animal must have caught him or this or that. So they were actually very happy. They thought, oh, you know, we didn't even have to kill him. It's even better. Like that. Now we can get some, you know, more benefit from our Ganga bath. So, but in front of Govinda, then they made a show that they were very, you know, lamenting and all this kind of thing. You know, they were feeling very bad. So then, let me see. Yeah. So then they carried on their way and went to north to the Ganges, and Ramanuja, he continued throughout the night, and then when he got very, very tired, he took rest under a tree, and then later in the morning he woke up, and he was feeling, you know, refreshed and invigorated, and then he started again to walk, but he wasn't quite sure where he was, which way to go. Then coming in the other direction, he saw a hunter and his wife. They would hunt birds. And they came that way, and then Ramanuja asked him, "Do you know where is Kanchipuram?" So then they said, "Oh, yes, we know, and we're also going there." He says, "So why would you be going to Kanchipuram, right? Generally, hunters stay in the forest." He says, "No, because we kill so many birds and all that, so we want to go for, you know, offer our respects to the Lord to get freed from all these sins." So then he says, "You come with us." So then he walked that rest of that day, and then the evening. Then in the evening, then the wife of the hunter said, "I'm very, very thirsty. I'd like some water." But then the hunter says, "No, but it's dark now. You know, it's very dangerous to go out. There's a nice well nearby. You know, be peaceful now, and in the morning we'll go there, and you can drink how much water you like." So they did that, and then in the morning, then when they got up, they went to that well, and then they Ramanuja went down to the well, and he collected water and came up and brought water for the hunter's wife. And he did this three times. He brought, you know, so much water, and every time he brought, she was not satisfied. So he's, you know, whatever. So then he went down for a fourth time. When he came back, the hunter and his wife, they were not there. And then then he understood that this was Lakshmi Narayan, that they had come to you know, save their devotee, to help him get through the forest, through these dangers. So then he was, you know, both very ecstatic, and he started reciting shlokas there at the well for a long time, from Srimad Bhagavatam, the prayers of Queen Kunti, and other things. And then after some time, then the girls from the local village, they came down to the well to collect water. And then so he kind of left the place, and he walked a little bit, and then he saw some, like, temples and some buildings, and he saw some Brahmin going by, and he says, "Can you tell me what place is this? Where am I?" And the Brahmin looked at him and says, "You don't know Kanchipuram, the famous place?" And he says, "Not only that, aren't you one of the students at Yadav Prakash's school in that? I see you living here. You don't know what the place is?" Like that. So Ramanuja was then very happy that the Lord had brought him there so quick. Took him 4 days to walk where they walked, but he got back in two. So then he went, found his house, went into his house. So his mother was there. She was expecting him to come after 6 months. So then she finds he's arrived after 6 days. So at first she's kind of wondering, well, who's this? But then when he started speaking and all that, then she could understand this was Ramanuja, you know, not some ghost or something else. And she was very happy. And then at that time, then also Ramanuja's wife and Govinda's mother came. And then they were very happy. And then the word got around that Ramanuja was back. And then it's Kanchipurna, that great devotee, he came. And they spent the night together discussing, you know, devotional philosophy and all these things like that. And then then after some time, then Yadav Prakash and everyone else got back from their tour. So they were a little surprised to find Ramanuja in Kanchipuram. And so then they behaved as if, "Oh, he's been found. Oh, very nice." You know, like this. It was very, they were showing a very great happiness and all that. And then they asked, "Well, where's Govinda?" He says, "Oh, Govinda, when we got to the Ganga, they were at Varanasi, and then when he was bathing in the river, he found a Shiva Linga. And he took this as a sign of the Lord, so then he began worshipping Lord Shiva. And then, you know, there, and then when they were coming back, then there's a holy place that's very dear to the Shaivites. And he stopped there and decided, "I'm staying here, worshipping Lord Shiva." So then Ramanuja heard this, he was very pained. He thought, you know, his cousin brother has become, you know, a Shaivite. And his, you know, whole mission was to, you know, how you say, destroy this Mayavadi philosophy. So then he went there. And Govinda, you know, because of his scholarliness and everything, become actually quite a main personality there at the ashram. He become very fixed. I think this is much time later Ramanuja went. It wasn't immediately, many years later. So he was the main person there. And Ramanuja went, and then one time when Govinda was out and he was up in some tree, he was picking flowers for the worship of Lord Shiva. Then Ramanuja, you know, without being known to him, came and sat close by and started singing very sweetly verses, you know, that glorifying the Lord and how, you know, only worship of the Lord is wonderful and how anything else is a waste of time and all these things. And these are also verses that were very dear to Govinda before. And so then, hearing these verses, then Govinda in the tree became stunned, you know, that he was hearing all these things. And then he realized what a great mistake he had made, how he had wasted so many years staying there and worshipping Lord Shiva. Then in his being stunned, he forgot he was in the tree, and that, and he fell out of the tree onto the ground, like that. So then, I think in that, then Ramanuja was, he took him away. I think the servants thought, I mean, the other members of the ashram, you know, thought something went wrong or you'd gone crazy or that, and Ramanuja says, I can fix this, and so he took him away. So, in this way, then Ramanuja was traveling, he was preaching, and establishing the Pancharatra in all the different places. He had gone, while he was there in Kanchipuram, then Yamunacharya came. Now he saw Ramanuja and he saw that this is someone very special and he wanted to talk to him. Because he could see by the symptoms on his body, he wasn't an ordinary person. He had to be a very great personality, a Mahapurush. So he wanted to speak with him, but then he saw him with Yadav Prakash, who was a Mayavadi. And Yamunacharya just didn't want to go anywhere near Mayavadi. So since he was studying at his school, then he didn't meet him. But he was hoping that he would. So then, at the end, Yamunacharya at that time was 100 years old. So then, sometime later, then he called that, you know, they should call Ramanuja. So then Ramanuja went there. And just as he got there, Yamunacharya had already just left. And so he felt very bad that he was called by the Acharya. He wanted to meet the Acharya. But he had already gone. But when he came there, the Yamunacharya's other disciples, then they mentioned there's a very strange phenomena that generally when someone dies, their body becomes relaxed and that. But he was holding his fist closed. He had three fingers closed like that. You know, so it was very strange. They thought, you know, what does this mean? So then Ramanuja came and he sat there next to him. And he was thinking for some time. And then he mentioned three things. One is, you know, that, because he had called him, so he must have wanted to say something. So he said, is it that you would want me to, you know, preach the glories of this Bhagavad Dharma and all this, you know, very widely? So then one of his fingers opened. And then he said, write a commentary on Vedanta Sutra, establishing the Vishishta Dwaita, and then the second finger opened. I'm not sure what the third one was. Do you know what the third one was?
I think it was protecting the devotees.
Protecting the devotees.
He was going to name someone. He was meant to name someone. The name was giving names. He would make some disciple a name and some particular name.
Of some particular person. Oh, okay. So then the third finger opened. And so then everyone was very happy with this. And so then in this way then he became a Sukshya disciple of Yamunacharya. So then this way he preached and everything. And then as he was preaching he would go around and establish Pancharatra. And the Vedic culture, the Varnashram, in the proper devotional understanding, so that people would follow Varnashram for the purpose of going back to Godhead, no other purpose. So this is the actual Daiva Varnashram. And in going around, he would establish Pancharatra at so many temples that many of them didn't have a systematic way of worship, or it was Tantra. You know, it was something established by Shankara or his followers. So in this way, his travels took him up to Puri. And in Jagannath Puri, then one day, you know, Jagannath came to him, and he had darshan of Jagannath, and Jagannath told him that he's here in Puri, but he should go to Navadvip and see the Lord's form as Gaurasundar there. And as Gaurasundar, then he will actually be blessed, because in the spiritual realm, then you have Goloka, and in Goloka there's Radha and Krishna. And so that combined form of Radha and Krishna is come as Gaurasundar. So then Jagannath said, if you go see this, then this will be very nice. So he was saying, well, I'm very satisfied in my worship of you. And he says, no, but this form even I am very happy to be in. So then this awoke his feelings towards Gaurasundar. So then he said, the references in scripture to this golden avatar are very rare and hidden. But now that you have pointed them out, then I will broadly spread them and preach and show how these are very essential points in the scripture. So Jagannath said, no, don't get too enthusiastic. Says, Lord, these will be revealed after Lord Chaitanya comes and performs his pastimes. But you yourself just go there, meet Lord Chaitanya, and get his blessings, like this. And then after that, then you go to Kurukshetra and meet your followers there. So then Ramanuja very happily went to Mayapur, and he saw Lord Chaitanya, came to the place Vaikuntha Puri, which is a place in Rudradweep. I think it must be this side, because the temple here is in Rudradweep. Yeah, the temple's in Rudradweep. We're now in Antadweep here, but the other side of this road, that's Rudradweep. So he met the Lord somewhere, and then Lord Chaitanya showed his form in that, and then after that, very happily, even though externally he just would preach about Vaikuntha and, you know, establishing all these nice aspects of Varnashram and Pancharatra in his heart, he was always remembering Lord Chaitanya and his pastimes. So this is he was in this way empowered by Lord Chaitanya to preach. Then after that he went to Kurukshetra. So generally the understanding is he wanted to establish Pancharatra in Puri, and Jagannath was very happy with what was already going on. So then, while he was sleeping, then at night, then Garuda picked him up and dropped him at Kurukshetra. So this is what was happening, but on the way, he also came to Mayapur, saw Lord Chaitanya, and then went to Kurukshetra. So this is the, you know, what we... can remember at this time. What time is it? 9:00. Are there any questions or any other parts of the story? Anyone wants to bring up? Yeah.
So, Sripa Ramacharya, he had a spiritual master. But with his permission, he went to four other Siksha Guru. He stayed away, just went there to get Siksha. Now they still spend time. They don't even bother spiritual master, they can go there.
It means people go and take initiation from someone else, you know. Yeah, that's the tradition is Diksha Guru is one. There's one Diksha Guru. Because the point is one sees them all as Siksha Gurus. The Madhyama understands all gurus as Siksha Gurus, because the fundamental element of Diksha is Siksha. Means diksha, means divyajnan, means that which gives transcendental knowledge. So the working element of diksha is the siksha. So if you're getting siksha, then diksha is complete. If you're not getting siksha, diksha is not complete. As we see, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he took diksha from Bipin Bihari. So the ritual side of it was complete. He was coming in the bona fide line, and he was a practicing Brahmin. He gave the Pancharatrika initiation, but he had no valuable siksha to give. He didn't actually know the siksha of Lord Chaitanya. He just knew the rituals of the Gaudiya Sampradaya. So therefore, he took siksha from Jagannath Das Babaji. So then, that makes the initiation complete. Otherwise, it's not complete. So, unfortunately, then, some consider the ritual side of it the most important side of it, because that is what I can see with my senses. Right? It means the Brahman is interested in knowledge. Right? But the common person is what they can see with the eyes. The Anuman, that's the most important for them, you know. So those who knowledge is not their interest, then what they can see externally, for them that's more important. So if I go to someone and there's some ritual, then I think there's some connection. But how is it that that ritual connects one any more than the instruction? Ritual, you walk away, ritual's been done. But the instruction goes with you. So factually, someone who knows that the instruction is the real connection. But the ritual looks like, because we're conditioned to that, means having deviated from the devotional path, we have spent, you know, which explains that the devotion to the Lord is the most essential. We have taken up the process of karma and jnana. And generally we find more emphasis is on karma. So by karma, we become very absorbed in that activity, a ritual gives fruit. Right? That's the whole approach. I perform an activity, I get a fruit from that. Right? That's it. So that's why in jnana they generally give up any activity, because they don't want any fruit. They don't understand the activity is actually meant for the Lord, because the fruit's the Lord. Karmanye vidikadaste, ma phaleshu kadachana. The fruit's not ours, the fruit's Krishna's. So then in this idea, then we think if the ritual is performed, something has happened. But if the speech has instruction is given, nothing's happened. So that's taken cheaply. Right? The ritual of diksha is everything. Right? And that must come from the Maha, you know, Bhagavat, Uttam, Adhikari, Nitya Siddha, you know, whatever you call it, you know, Parishad, all that. But siksha you can get from anybody, you know, even in a Cracker Jack's box, they give you fortune cookies. It doesn't matter, you can get anywhere siksha. That's cheap, you know. It's, you know, right there. You get so many of these books around, right? You know, tons of them, go down like that. So this is those who are conditioned to karma. They'll think like this. So then if they have faith in some advanced person, rather than just taking the blessings of the spiritual master, hearing from them like that, because the whole process is sadhu sangha, and the more people you hear from, the better. Right? The same kirtan means a complete association. It's not to be fixed on one person, but that complete association. So by hearing from other people with the blessings of the spiritual master, it only enhances devotional service. But unfortunately, they will think that that's not actually substance, because they're not going for instruction. They're going for karma, ritual and the fruit of that ritual. So therefore, they will give up a bona fide spiritual master and then go and accept the ritual from someone else. But one doesn't have to worry. They are not re-initiated. Because factually, initiation is accepting the instruction. So instruction wasn't the difficulty. I mean, it is the importance. So factually, they haven't actually been initiated by the person. They've gone through the ritual. So socially, we will say, yes, they're initiated. But we know they're not. That what actually comes into doubt, were they actually even initiated by the first spiritual master? And then what comes even more into doubt is, do they even qualify to be initiated by a bona fide spiritual master? Because they don't understand the process at all. Therefore, these things people can do, but why we should worry? You know, it's just like in Vrindavan. So many are there serving under Srimati Radharani and trying to please Radha and Krishna, but there's others who are not interested in pleasing Radha and Krishna. They want to please Krishna, but through other means. You know, through other gopis and this and that. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in one of his books, then offers a prayer, says, let them do whatever they like. We don't care. We know we're worshipping Radha and Krishna. They can do what we like. We offer their respects, you know. But we're not, that's their path. It's not our path. We're not interested. So we don't need to speak or jump up and down. Let them do. What do we care? Like that. Better. Now one thinks that my spiritual master is now rid of the burden of such an unqualified disciple. Right? Because it's one of the 9 offenses to the holy name to preach to the faithless. So here is a faithless person that my spiritual master has preached to. So there might be some offense there. You know, the reaction of having accepted an unqualified person, they go to my spiritual master. So actually, it's a great blessing. Now my spiritual master is relieved of this burden. But it's unfortunate that another bona fide Vaishnava, you know, unknowingly has accepted, you know, even now a worse burden like that. So like this, we can... Does that make any sense?
Sorry. I just wonder, isn't that what the Rigvedic say? That anyone can give initiation, but Prabhupada's...
No, they say the opposite. The Rigvedics say only Prabhupada can give initiation, but you can get instruction from anywhere. That's why it's a little bit backwards. Yeah, it's just they want to connect everyone with Prabhupada, but the connection is made through siksha, not through diksha. It's like Ramanuja is known as a disciple of Yamunacharya, but by siksha. The glory is in the siksha. The diksha is secondary. Means the glory of being Prabhupada's disciple, diksha disciple. It's just he was there, so you get that diksha. But what's special is that you're getting Prabhupada's siksha instruction, but that's available to everyone. So in etiquette, socially, then someone who's in previous generation, that's respected, but only socially like that, in that aspect. But those who take advantage of Prabhupada's siksha, and that, and that's the real disciple. The real disciple of the acharya is one who takes the instructions. And this is, there's no time on this. Generations can go by, and if you take that siksha seriously, one is the siksha disciple of that person. And that's the essential initiation. That's the real aspect, or the root of initiation. So that means anyone in ISKCON who seriously takes the instructions of Prabhupada to heart and tries to push on his mission is a real disciple of Prabhupada. Like that. That's the thing. The Pancharatra is there to assist because we're conditioned. We have a conditioned nature, and that's manifest as our body. And the Pancharatra then regulates that body so that we stay away from sinful desires. We're able to take advantage of the siksha that is given by the acharya. So that's essential. And that you must get from someone who's alive. There must be that relationship. Right? This idea, it's an impersonal idea. Right? The Ritvik thing is impersonal because you can establish a relationship when there's no contact. Right? But the Pancharatra, they have to be there. There has to be some contact. But the instruction doesn't, that is the contact. You understand? Means ritual is external, so there must be physical presence of the two people who are performing the ritual. But siksha, the instruction is eternal. So even you hear that, we're hearing the instructions of, you know, Krishna to Lord Brahma, which happened 151 trillion years ago. But we can, that connection can be there. That makes some sense. So it's the sentiment of wanting to make that firm establishment of everyone in ISKCON to Prabhupada, that is, you know, well appreciated. But they're going through it from the ritualistic, you know, side of a kanista, rather than through the, you know, the knowledge, the actual understanding and siddhanta of the advanced devotees, which is siksha. You understand?
So then for me, I shouldn't worry about, sort of, for example, if my guru has fallen away, the main thing I should concentrate is the instruction of Prabhupada, developing that relationship.
Yeah, that is there. That's the main thing. It means everybody is developing a double relationship at once. One is that with Srila Prabhupada, because he's the founder acharya, where everyone's following his instructions. The present gurus are giving just the instructions of Prabhupada. They're bona fide because they're speaking what Prabhupada says. They don't speak what Prabhupada says, they're not bona fide. They don't stand on their own. Right? When you're really working in a mission, you're part of the mission as long as you represent the founder. Right? Now, if you have someone who's, let's say, they're one of the sannyasi acharyas in the Madhva line, but he's speaking Shankara, no one will accept him as a Madhva. They'll say, oh, he can be a Shankara, but he's not a Madhva. You understand? Mission means you're bona fide in the mission because you speak what the acharya says. Right? So someone who speaks what Prabhupada says is a bona fide representative in his line. So that is there. So if someone starts speaking stuff that Prabhupada doesn't say, if we're interested in maintaining our connection with Prabhupada, then we can't take that seriously. It has no meaning at all. We have no obligation to any such instructions. If we want to connect ourselves just with that person, and that person on the weight of his simply diksha connection to the Sampradaya, but not siksha, then that's our own choice. But we have to understand it's a very weak choice. And other acharyas like Bhaktivinoda Thakur did not consider that such a connection was strong enough. Right? Because Pancharatra in this age is not a viable process on its own. It's an assistant to the holy name. If this is Dwarpara Yuga, okay. But this is Kali Yuga. So the Bhagavat or the Siksha line, that's the actual process. And these others are simply assistants. Like that. So one has that relationship, and one has a relationship with that person who is helping you understand. That person or persons who will help you understand Prabhupada's instructions. So that can mean so many Siksha Gurus. Now that then amongst those so many Siksha Gurus, one becomes a Diksha Guru. One gives the Pancharatra, or the secondary connection. The main connection is the holy name and the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, as given to us by our acharyas, the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy. Secondary is the Pancharatra. So one of them does that. Right? So now if that person is not available, right, then we take advantage of the siksha relationships that we have. Like that. And in this way just go on with our devotional service and continue cultivating our relationship with Prabhupada, which we were doing before that, and now cultivate also with the community of devotees. So it's just a matter of where you emphasize. What is desired by basically all the devotees, and what is also desired even by the Ritviks, is done if it's understood as siksha. But when they try to do it on the lower form of diksha, it doesn't have any meaning. What's the big deal that the Nitya Siddha founder Acharya has come down and he gave Pancharatrika initiation? I mean, that's almost like an insult. That's our word. That siksha you can hear from anywhere. No, it's Prabhupada's instructions. That is the special thing. That's the special thing. That's why you want to approach an Uttamanakari. Why? Just because he can chant the mantras for the ritual better or something? Or he's done more of them, he's been around longer, so he's done more. So therefore, you're sure that, the fruit of the ritual will go nicely. No, it's because he has realization. By seeing the Uttamanakari, you chant Hare Krishna. And he's fixed in his understanding. He knows the conclusion of the scriptures. And he is able to give us the realizations on that. So these are why one approaches an Uttamanakari. So therefore, everyone in ISKCON studies Prabhupada's books. We approach the Uttamanakari. But because we're conditioned, we have to have a connection. And it's also the etiquette. Right? Krishna wants to see that etiquette done. Because Krishna has made the etiquette. One approaches a guru and takes initiation from him. That's the etiquette. Krishna does it, Lord Chaitanya does it, Lord Ramachandra does it, everybody does it. Because the whole Vedic culture and the whole Pancharatra is only for devotional service, it's not for something else. Unscrupulous people use it for karma and jnana, but that's not what it's meant for devotional service. Like that. So therefore we approach, because then Krishna sees you approach, who's there. And then Krishna in the heart works through that person. Right? He works through that person. He within your heart inspires you. But he waits to see what you do with Guru. Right? Means it's Krishna who's going to liberate everybody. No one else is going to liberate. Right? Means we've heard many times that Radharani, when she's pleased with the devotee, goes to Krishna and says, "This devotee is very nice, you please accept him." Then Krishna accepts him. So now if Radharani has to do that, then surely everybody else does. Isn't it? So it's being recommended by the person before you. Right? Krishna, then Radharani is recommending, then whoever recommends to her, and then like this it comes down to parampara, until it gets to the person standing before us. And when they recommend, they are pleased, the Lord is pleased. Because in the spiritual world, we are going to serve under a devotee. We're not going to directly serve the Lord. It doesn't happen. We may do direct service, but that service is not directly rendered. I don't know if that makes sense, but means the authority for rendering that service does not come directly from the Lord. That comes through the devotees. We may personally do some direct service for the Lord under the direction of the devotees. But Krishna does not accept direct service from anybody except his direct devotees, which means Srimati Radharani, Jashoda Mayi, Subal, Sridham, like this. Everybody else has to serve under them. You want to please Krishna in the parental ras, you have to please Mother Jashoda. And then she'll say, "Oh, please cook for Krishna, serve Krishna Bashad, help bathe him," like this. You can't just go up to Krishna yourself and try. Krishna's not interested. You can't approach the devotees. Krishna's not interested. So therefore he sees here that we see matter. So therefore, we have to have some matter in front of us, so we call Guru and approach that. Right? And when Krishna sees that, then he understands this devotee is serious in engaging his understanding, his level, in his service. Right? So this is tattvas. Now the tattva has to at one point turn into personalism. We leave it at tattvas, this is the Mayavad. But at one point it has to become personal. That's culture. Therefore, all the nice dealings and respect and all these different engagements between the spiritual master and disciple. Because the Lord is a person, the devotee is a person, and the exchange is personal. So then these aspects come up. But that's being done on behalf of the Lord. Right? It's just like you have a representative of the company. Right? Let's say you have a big company. That representative represents the company. And if you want to deal with the company, you go through that representative. But where does it say that that representative has to be on the same platform as the person that they represent and know how to run the whole company and have as much knowledge and experience and as drive and everything like that? They have to be on the platform of the managing director to represent the company. So this is the Kanista understanding. The Madhyamas understand that he properly represents by speaking and everything. He is a bona fide representative. Right? Like you have the viceroy of the king. When they come to the country, he doesn't have to have all the qualities of the king, power of the king, realizations of the king. He simply just has to say what the king has to say. He simply comes and says, "My dear sir, his majesty says this." And you know, it behooves you to do it. And if you don't know how to do it, he can help train you how you should do that. So we have to understand actually what are the relationships. Otherwise it turns into a big impersonal mess. And it becomes totally uncultured. Right? And then it becomes very strange. Right? We have to increase we increase, you know, all our respect, our dealings for the common devotee, like that, because we have to have love, trust, and see the individual and be personal and all these things, that the other side is respectable persons, that we should reduce that and out of the way because they're not actually shakshat hari and all this, and they're just a schmutz like everybody else. But if they're a schmutz like everybody else, they should be dealt with nicely, because everybody else is supposed to be love and trust and showing your heart and all these things. So we can see it's just, it's impersonalism. All these difficulties arise because of impersonalism. So Prabhupada went to Nirviseshu Nivad. But if we're not careful, we came from Nirviseshu Nivad, we'll go back to it. Right? Just because we joined Prabhupada's mission didn't mean that we all just suddenly, all this went away from the heart. It's going away. If we're not careful, it'll just come back. Just like Prabhupada said, he made that statement, someone stays in the temple 3 days, you got to shave up. Because otherwise they had all this long hair, and then all the disciples who were hippies before with long hair would become attracted. So he says, again, you'll all become hippies. Like that, you know. So like that, we have to be very, very careful. I think we should end here. Otherwise it's getting late. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki Srila Prabhupada ki Srila Ramanujacharya ki Samavita Bhaktivarinda ki Jainita Gaurabrinda.